Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Faith Focus Weekly Discipleship Podcast. My name is Kevin Rognes, and I am the Discipleship Director here at Faith Covenant Church. I just want to thank you for watching or listening if you're on YouTube or whatever podcasting platform you're on. We're just really grateful that you would take any time to spend with us. I want to encourage you to subscribe to make sure that you don't miss anything, and also, I would love it if you would leave a review. We always like to hear how we're doing and what we can improve upon. So, the thing that I'm going to do today is something that I've done a few other times and just share something that I've been learning in my own time of reading the Bible. There's lots of different ways to go through the Bible. There's lots of different questions you can ask, a variety of different study methods and resources to draw upon when you're reading the Bible. In the last couple of years, what I have found most effective for me in this season that I'm in is to simply be reading the Bible alongside with my journal. And as I read the Bible, when I have observations or questions, I just write that down. And that's a really, really great way for me to feel like I'm really engaging and learning things as I'm reading. So one of those things that I'm learning or observing recently, I've been going through the Torah, also known as the Pentateuch, also known as the first five books of the Bible. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Right now I've been going through Numbers, and I'm going to kind of settle in Numbers 13 today and just kind of share a couple things that have been challenging me and just noticing ways that the biblical text is affecting me and kind of making me look at things in life. So to give some context about what's happening here at this point in the biblical story, the Israelites have been led out of slavery in Egypt. Moses led them. There was a series of plagues that God did upon the Egyptians to show them that he is God and to lead to the Egyptians basically kicking out the Israelites and saying, okay, we no longer just want to keep you in slaves. We want to get you out of here because you are bad news for us because your God is God and we have done you wrong and you need to leave so that these horrible things stop happening to us. So the Israelites leave. They go out into the desert. We think somewhere along like the Sinai Peninsula area, which is modern-day Egypt. Israel, modern-day Israel and Egypt is kind of the borders are in that vicinity. And so they get out into that region. God did amazing things to even get them there with those plagues. God later parted the Red Sea. God led the people by using a pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire to literally tell the people, follow this, go this way, making it extremely clear and extremely divine. There's no naturally occurring pillar of fire or pillar of cloud that just happens in nature. That's a divine thing. So the Israelites have been led by God in that way. God has also been providing for them in miraculous ways, providing food, providing water as they're out there in the desert. Now, back in 2016, I had the opportunity to go to Israel, and I saw just a brief glimpse of some of this land that they would have been out in. And let me tell you, it is a desert. There is very little water, very little plant life, very little of what could sustain a nation of people that have fled with very limited resources. So the fact that God has maintained them and provided for them in that context is, again, miraculous. It is a show of divine power. So one would think that with all of that in mind, that the Israelites would just be very trusting in God and just really follow God very well, right? Well, not so much. So as they're out in the desert, they're often complaining to Moses, who is the human leader that's kind of the go-between between the people and God. They're complaining to Moses about not having enough food or the kind of food that they're having or not having enough water. And they're complaining about this and complaining about that and thinking, oh, we would have been better off dying in Egypt. So they're having a really difficult time with trusting in God. So as they're out there, they know at some point they're being led to the land of Canaan, which is where modern-day Israel and Palestine are. And they know that they're going there. They've been told it's a land flowing with milk and honey. And their ancestors came from there. But at this point, there are so many generations and hundreds of years removed from that time that they don't know what that land is like anymore. And so when we get to chapter 13, and we're not going to read all of it, but at the beginning of chapter 13, God tells Moses to pick 12 scouts to go scout out the land of Canaan. So in verses 4 through 15, Moses picks 12 scouts, one from each of the tribes of Israel. And they have all these different names. We're not going to go through all of them. The two names we do want to remember, though, of these 12 scouts are Caleb and Joshua. Initially, Joshua's name is first Hoshea, but his name gets changed to Joshua. We don't really know why. It's just changed. That happens sometimes. So so they are chosen to be the scouts of the land of Canaan to kind of tell them what's going on. So then when Moses has chosen them, he gives them kind of some specific instructions about what to go look for. And so I'm going to read that part first. Chapter, again, Numbers 13, verses 17 through 20. And here's what Moses says. When Moses sent them to scout out the land of Canaan, he told them, "Go up this way to the Negev," which is kind of the region. "Go up this way to the Negev, and then go into the hill country. See what the land is like, and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. Is the land they live in good or bad? Are the cities they live in encampments or fortifications? Is the land fertile or unproductive? Are there trees in it or not? Be courageous. Bring back some fruit of the land." It was the season for the first ripe grapes. So Moses here is giving really specific instructions and really kind of key strategic things to ask about. He's asking about the land and whether or not it's fertile, whether or not they can grow crops in it. He says, bring back some fruit of the land. So bring us some evidence of what this land can produce for us. And then Moses is asking also about a kind of assessment of the population that's already there. Are they a strong people? Are there a lot of them? What kinds of homes do they live in? Are they living in tents? That would be easier to take over. Or are they living in fortified areas that are going to be more difficult to take and may require some different strategies? So Moses has some pretty specific questions. So in verses 21 through 25, the 12 scouts go do that. They spend 40 days scouting out the land, and they go as far as they can. It may seem like 40 days is a long time to be checking things out, but keep in mind, these guys were probably on foot, and they've got to roam a pretty significant area, and they may have had to do so while trying to be undetected. So it may seem like a long time to be kind of scouting out the area, but it's a lot of territory to cover when you're on foot. So they go do that. They check out the land, and then they come back. So we get their report about what the land is like in verses 27 through 29. So I'm going to read through this and kind of make some comments along the way. So they get back, they show everybody the fruit, and then starting at verse 27, they say, "They reported to Moses, 'We went into the land where you sent us. Indeed, it is flowing with milk and honey, and here is some of its fruit.'" So right off the bat there, they're confirming that, yes, the land is good. It can produce for us. We will have food. It has the image of flowing with milk. Obviously, milk is not a like free-flowing thing like you might see in a river or a lake or a pond. But the imagery there is that the land is able to sustain herds like cows, herds of cows or other livestock, and those animals are the animals that produce the milk. So it's good for growing crops and it's good for sustaining livestock. So it's flowing with milk and honey. So verse 27, they're kind of confirming what has been told to them by God, like, yes, okay, the land is good. It is fertile. It can provide. Verse 28, however, the people living in the land are strong, and the cities are large and fortified. We also saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites are living in the land of the Negev, the Hethites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live by the sea and along the Jordan. So there, that may seem like it's not a terrible report, but they're saying basically the people are strong, the land is good, but however, the people are really strong. They're kind of citing all these big groups and where they're living. So they are answering the questions that Moses put forth, but they're answering it in a way that's kind of saying, uh-oh, they're maybe too strong. They haven't quite tipped their hand yet about how they feel, but we'll get there in a moment. Then we get to verse 30, and I love verse 30 because this is when Caleb, one of those 12 spies, speaks up. Then Caleb quieted the people in the presence of Moses and said, "Let's go up now and take possession of the land, because we can certainly conquer it." So Caleb is already all in. He's like, he doesn't dispute, which is interesting. He does not dispute that the people in the land are strong and that the cities are fortified. He agrees with that. He doesn't dispute that. But he immediately is like, yeah, let's go. The land is good. It's what we've been promised by God. Let's go take it. He has a very faithful response that exhibits tremendous trust that God can provide the means to take the land. Love Caleb here. He's an awesome dude. However, then we get into verses 31 through 33, the end of the chapter. And here's kind of where the other 10 scouts, other than Caleb and Joshua, kind of gang up together and kind of have a response about what they think they see. So starting in verse 31. But the men who had gone up with him responded, "We can't attack the people because they are stronger than we are." So they gave a negative report to the Israelites about the land they had scouted, saying, "The land we passed through to explore is one that devours its inhabitants, and all the people we saw in it are men of great size. We even saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak came from the Nephilim. To ourselves, we seemed like grasshoppers, and we must have seemed the same to them." So right away, the other 10 scouts are trying to kind of poison the other people against Caleb and against Moses' leadership to say, no, we cannot go take this land. The people there are so strong and so big. There's reference to the Nephilim. I don't really know what that is. There's been a lot of biblical and scholarly debate about what the Nephilim were. There's references to the Nephilim kind of in the Noah narrative as well, in Genesis like 6 through 7 or so. We're not really sure, but the idea that we're getting here is that the people in the land are very large. Like, not only maybe they may have been more populous, but also just physically, the Israelites seem to be smaller than the people living in the land. Which, if you think about that, that's not entirely shocking, because for centuries prior, the Israelites have been enslaved, and so they've maybe not been fed as well, they've been worked too hard, so they maybe just have not had enough nutrition to be as physically large as other people. That's just my guess, I don't know, but it makes sense that that would be the case. So the other scouts are basically saying, nope, we can't do it. The other people here are too strong. This is too dangerous. This is a bad idea. We should not go do this. So then we're not going to read the rest of it, but going into chapter 14, the rest of the Israelites are persuaded by these 10 scouts to say, oh, no, we're not going there. We're not going to invade. these people are too strong for us, we can't do this, even though they've had a year or more of God doing incredible things on their behalf, they decide, nope, we can't do it, this is too much for us. And certainly the Lord responds to that, and the Lord says, fine, you don't want to take the land, you don't get the land for another 40 years. So God says, you are going to wander the desert for 40 years. And God provides for them during that time, provides food and water. But for 40 years, they're not allowed to enter the land because of this moment. So when I was reading this, I was just really struck because I really love the example of Caleb there in verse 30. He says, let's go up now and take possession. So he is trusting in God. He is trusting in what God has said about the land. He's ready to go. He's like, yes, let's do this. Let's go. It's the other 10 scouts that don't have that trust. They are, I don't know if they're forgetting what they've witnessed, what God has done, or if they're just not quite getting it yet. In any case, they don't have the same trust that Caleb has. When we look at characters in the Bible, or even in our own lives, when we see people that should be trusting in God and they don't, we often think that that is just a lack of trust altogether. And maybe there's some truth to that. But as I was reading through this time, I realized that it's not that they lacked trust. They had trust. They were just not trusting in God. They were trusting in the possible powers against them. So when the scouts went out and scouted the land, they trusted the power of the people that would be fighting against them. They trusted in the power of the Amalekites, of the Canaanites, the Heshites, the Jebusites, all these groups. They trusted in those people. They trusted in what they saw of these fortified cities instead of trusting in God. They trusted the power against them instead of the power for them. Likewise, when the scouts present their report and they start convincing the people, or start trying to convince the people have a choice. The people can trust in God, or at least trust that Moses is leading them with God's direction, or they can trust these 10 scouts that just went and saw it. Now, to be fair, the majority of the scouts, these 10 of the 12 scouts, are telling the people, this is a no-go situation. And so on that level, I can understand why the people were more inclined to believe the 10 people who went versus Moses who didn't. Still, they are trusting in power against them instead of trusting in the power that is for them. And that was just really something very striking to me. And I thought of a variety of examples in my own life of times where I have been trusting in, in retrospect, I've sometimes thought, okay, I wasn't trusting in God then. And that's true. I wasn't trusting in God. But it's not that I didn't have any trust at all. I was trusting in the power against me. Now, it may not have been a power that was like specifically like out to get me. It may have just been the circumstances were not in my favor. But still, I was trusting in those circumstances that were not in my favor instead of trusting a God who is in my favor. Even when things don't work out quite the way I expect or hope them to, I realize I was trusting in those circumstances, and those circumstances were failing me. God was never failing me. I just was not trusting in God. And I just really, we often think about a lack of trust in God, and we don't realize that that also means a trust in something else. So I would just challenge you and encourage you to think through your life in that way. And maybe you look at the past examples of that where you look back and say, okay, in that moment, I was not just not trusting in God, but I was trusting in this circumstance. I was trusting that cancer or illness was bigger than what God can do. Or I was trusting in the sports team to beat my sports team. Or I was trusting in these circumstances that have been holding me back. I know in my life I've battled depression, and so sometimes I have trusted depression and its ability to hold me down instead of trusting in God and letting God lift me up. There are so many examples and ways that we can apply this. I'm not going to go off on all the different ways that that can happen in our lives. But I was just so deeply struck by that as I was reading through this. Are you trusting in the power against you, or are you trusting in God's power for you? So that's what I want to leave you with today. Are you trusting in God, or are you trusting in something else that is against you in some way? So if you have any thoughts about that, I would love to hear from you. My email address is listed in the episode description, or if you're here at Faith Covenant, pull me aside someday and let me know what you think. I'm always curious to hear how other people are engaging with Scripture and what they're learning in God's Word. So please drop us a line and let us know what you're learning. Thank you so much for watching or listening. I hope you have a wonderful and blessed day.